Warning, the following podcast contains spoilers and swears. Hi there, what's your name?
Evelyn, what's yours?
Scott, what are we doing here?
It's a podcast.
About what?
The magicians.
And?
Magicians related things.
And?
Sometimes other stuff.
And?
Other stuff other than the other stuff.
Happy things.
Happy things.
That's what today's all about, happy things.
Well, we are talking about Season 4, Episode 5, Escape from the Happy Place.
Directed by Mira Menon.
Woo!
Good job, Mira.
Ah, yes.
All right, so let's talk about this. What is going on? We learn the exciting origin story.
Of Todd?
Yes.
Well, we see Elliot and Todd, and Elliot is teaching Todd how to make the signature cocktail of the physical kid's cottage.
Which is what?
This bright green fucking thing.
But what is it? What kind of drink is it?
We don't know what's in there.
Doesn't anybody have like a... Like, why didn't they make a the magician's mixology guide or something?
Because they didn't capitalize on anything.
No? They don't even have like a calendar or anything?
Nope.
Really? No merch other than that one freebie board game?
Yeah.
Yeah, there is more merch?
No.
Oh. There wasn't even, like, a physical kid's sweater you could buy, like Harry Potter?
No, I don't think so.
Oh. What about a shot glasses that's had the magicians on them?
Nope.
Yeah, they were. They were in that crappy board game.
Yeah, but that's only that one thing.
So two things.
That's that
shot
one
glasses
thing,
with board game.
It's that one thing, though.
All right.
But, yes, we see Elliot making Todd a drink. Well, actually, he's making it for himself. And then we hear knocking. Mysterious knocking. And then kind of we see this whole kind of continuous shot change of Elliot walking around the physical kid's cottage, and suddenly there's a party, and there he's with Margot, and she's like, is this the best party we've ever had? Obviously, yes, you know, and then Elliot lays down on Margot's lap, and it's a different day, and they're smoking, and all throughout this whole time, we hear this knocking noise, and every single time Elliot hears the knocking noise, he's like, oh, I don't want to get it, and everyone around him is like, should I get that? Well, no, never mind. And so the knocking keeps happening, and, you know, Elliot ends up coming back around to Todd, and he introduces himself as Elliot, and Todd's like, oh, well, oopsies, so one of us has to leave, because my name's Elliot
no,
also.
No, wait, you did not tell that right. Elliot says, I didn't know your name, and then Todd says, oh, my name's Elliot, too, and then Elliot says, well, we can't have that, what's your middle name, and Elliot says, it's Todd. And so Elliot says,
it's
all right.
Todd. Just say Todd.
Now it's Todd.
Just say Todd.
They were both Elliots. That was the joke. They're
yeah.
both Elliots.
I adequately explained that.
So that fits in with my theory that...
Elliot's trans and he only gets one... He's the only one who's allowed to have the Elliot name.
No.
Sorry, Elliot
nothing,
Page.
No, it has nothing to do with trans. It's about Todd being the main character.
No, Todd is not the main character. Todd dies.
No, he does not.
Eventually, everyone dies.
Don't ruin the plot for me.
I will ruin... Whoa! Yeah, speaking of that, the dog is in the room.
We have a special guest today.
Yeah,
and he agrees with me.
He does not agree. That was a disagreement.
That was
noise.
An agreement no. about Todd, because he didn't no. like you smack-talking about Todd.
No.
Go back and listen to it.
No. But eventually the knocking just gets really annoying, and Margot insists on answering the door, and she's like, oh, I'll go tell him off. And she goes to the door, and she says, no, you can't come in, but she gets grabbed and pulled outside. So Elliot runs after
and
her.
And it's Freddy Krueger.
No.
Oh.
He runs outside to an empty campus. He actually runs outside of the main Breakbills
right.
building, which is not where the physical kid's cottage is.
They probably tore down the physical kid's cottage.
No, it's a real house.
Oh, is it?
It's a real person's house.
Okay. Maybe they weren't allowed to shoot there anymore.
No. But, so he runs out, and we see Charlton. He is in a... stranglehold.
Now wait,
via
who is Charlton?
Margot. He's the guy that Elliot shot.
He's
in
the original
end.
Monster.
He's not the original
well,
monster.
Well, he's in our perspective.
He's not the original monster. He is one of the bodies.
He was the
that got
first
possessed.
Body we saw.
He was not. He was the first body we saw.
Right.
Yes.
So
and
he's
Elliot
the
shot
monster.
His body. He's not the original monster.
Well, in our perspective,
he's
he is
not the original
From
monster.
From our perspective, he is.
No,
because
well,
we've never seen the other the bodies.
But he's not a monster. He's just a little Jiminy Cricket man who lives inside Elliot's head. And he's like, I'm not gonna hurt you. And Elliot says, yeah, you know, I'm not worried about you hurting me or hurting Margo, because Margo has him in a deep, deep chokehold. But Charlton says, hey, you know, we have to get inside. There's dangerous monsters out here. We have to get out of here. And we hear this haunting cry. And so they all run back inside. And then we kind of pull out of the eyeball once again to that scene that we saw at the end of episode 4, where the monster told Quentin that Elliot was dead. And so the monster and Quentin are, you know, they're back where we saw them before. They're at that little diner eating some, you know, fries or whatever. And the monster's like, are you done being sad now? Yes, Chewie. The monster asked that, and Quentin is not done being sad. But, you know, the monster is still trying to figure out what's up with the god beans and stuff, and Quentin is being unhelpful, which is not good when you're around a homicidal monster.
Right.
So Quentin tries to be helpful, even though he's super sad, and he says, you know, well, the bean looks old, so, you know, maybe you could go to the oldest place on Earth, which is Mesopotamia. And so the monster, Jennifer, is like, okay, cool, I'm gonna go do that. I'll meet you back at the apartment and make sure you're not sad anymore. And so the monster leaves and goes to Mesopotamia. And then we see Elliot and Charlton. This is where Charlton introduces himself. He was one of the bodies that got possessed by the monster, and Elliot apologizes for shooting him.
And we get some really good funny faces from Margo during this
scene.
Yes,
some very funny faces from Margo, because Charlton says, hey, you know, this place is made up of all your memories. Even her over there, Margo, is a memory. If you imagine that she's gone, then she will disappear. And Margo's like, don't do it. And then he does it, and Margo disappears. Which, you know, spooks Elliot. And, you know, Charlton says to Elliot, you know, a monster possessed you and is now inhabiting your body. So that's kind of the gist. And we haven't seen Elliot, you know, for 4 whole episodes. It's been very sad.
Yeah, just think of his paycheck.
Yeah. Well, no, he's been doing the monster stuff.
Oh,
so.
That's true.
But, you know, Charlton explains that outside there are spooky monsters, old inmates of the same prison the main monster was in, but they all got consumed
they're
and
Nazguls.
Possessed. Yes, they're basically Nazguls. Jennifer is Sauron, if we want to get into that. But also Charlton says, you know, hey, I have a question for you. What is fuck? The word itself. And Elliot's like, well, you know, it's a pretty fluid word for language, you know? What is fuck, Dad?
It's a word that really we shouldn't be saying on this podcast.
Well, fuck. Charlton explains that the physical kid's cottage in this case is, in fact, Elliot's happy place. It is the concentration of all his memories, and it's the only place that the creatures outside can't come and get him. And Elliot's like, okay, cool, but, like, how do we get out of here? And Charlton says, no, you know what happens when you try to get out of here? You'll end up like the Night Aura. You haven't seen her lately, huh? You know why? Because she watched her own body get, like, destroyed because she tried to go find her door, and she got mauled to death and murdered, and it was awful. And, of course, Elliot says, what door? So, according to get out of the happy place and to get out of the monster, you have to find the door to the most repressed memory in your whole life, the worst one ever, and you have to get out of that door, and then you will take control of your body again.
Sounds easy. They do it in like a montage, and that's the end.
No.
Of course not, because everything is a big convoluted quest on the Magicians.
Well, speaking of quests, we see Alice and Plover, and they're tramping around the Netherlands. Alice has a book that leads a person to where they're supposed to go. She is talking to Plover, and Plover says, you know, never apologize for who you are, which is good advice if it wasn't coming from a pedophile. So Alice changes the direction on the little map on the Netherlands and leads them to the poison room instead. So then we get more Charlton and Elliot, and this is when Charlton is explaining that you've got to find the door. And Elliot says, you know, I need to just get one moment to tell my friends that I'm alive. That's all I need. And he's like, okay, so what's the door? And the door is the place you think of the least because it's so terrible, you know? And
it's
so
your biggest regret.
It's your biggest regret. Right. The biggest regret of all the regrets, you know. And Charlton's was leaving home. And so Elliot's like, okay, we're going to go find this door. We're going to go outside. You're coming with me, Charlton. And Charlton's like, why do I have to come? And he says, you're coming. So then we see Alice and Plover. Alice has led them to this locked fountain, which is, of course, the poison room from season two. And she unlocks the fountain, like, cover, and Plover gets in, and he's like, you know, there's a little bit of trepidation, because he's like, I've never seen a locked fountain before. Well, you know, if it wasn't poisoned, then of course it wouldn't be locked. But he gets into the fountain, and Alice gives him a rope, and she says, you know, go on in, and Plover says, hey, I hope you find what you're looking for, and Alice is like, okay. And Plover jumps in, and then she throws the rope back in after him.
Yeah.
Good on
Alice. She should have put the lid back on.
She should have put the lid back on, and she should have, like, pushed him in.
Yeah, I know. Uh-huh. That would have been funny.
Yeah. But then we see Whitespire. Margot is back in Fillory, and we see Penny 23 eating some eggs. He's having breakfast.
Not just eggs.
Just
eggs.
A
whole big spread of breakfast that Josh... off screen made for him.
Yes. And Margot says, hey, can you be my personal Uber? I need to go get my birthright box. It's very important for Fillory and for ruling this kingdom. And Penny 23 says, no, I have to help Julia with her goddess stuff. And plus, you brought your little boy Terry here too, so, like, why can't I hang out with my girl? And Margot's like, Josh and I are cool. It's fine. Stop
being
weird.
Josh is the cook. And you're eating breakfast. You ingrateful bastard.
Yeah, she brought Josh to cook food, which, right, of course, makes sense because he's a good cook.
Well, all right, so this brings up a question that is later presented in the story, which is there's a part later on where Margot's like, where's all the staff? And Fenn's like, they went home at night. Who has Castle's staff that goes home at night?
Well, it's like if the queen were to die... In England, there's a mourning period of, like, I think a week. They have to change all the money. They have to change, like, all the broadcasts to the announcement that the queen is dead. They have to do all this shit.
Right, but they're still at the castle.
Yeah, but they have specific duties that they are not supposed to perform while the queen is dead and so on and so forth. Like, there's a lot of stuff that halts, you know, and just stops immediately.
Is this only for England?
This is for England. What I don't know
Sweden?
What it's like for other stuff.
Or
I don't know.
Other,
but
Spain.
I don't know. Maybe the same, maybe different. But since it kind of stops there, it kind of makes sense that in Fillory things would stop as well.
But they would still be living in the castle.
Yeah, no, it's just that they're not working. They are doing the formal mourning process.
All right.
That's what it is. And the formal mourning process involves all these rituals that, you know, Fenn explains some of them. And another part of the ritual is the fact that they have to build, you know, this monument to their dead ruler. And so that's why the only people working are carpenters.
So
do
they do that for every dead ruler?
Yeah, clearly.
How come we never saw...
Because no one has died from this point. You know, Martin was never a king of Fillory.
I thought he was a high king.
No,
I thought the kids were high kings.
Well, but he had become tyrannical at that point. So
but they still
would
have made a statue. Tyrants still get statues.
Well, he didn't get a statue.
Maybe he built one while he was a tyrant.
Alice died, but she was never really queen at all. So
that's not fair.
And maybe the stuff happened off screen and we never saw it. But Elliot has been ruling for a while, and even when he wasn't, you know, high king, he was still king.
Right.
So that's why they're doing the mourning ritual. But, you know, that's all to be said. Fenn asks, where's Elliot? And Elliot is...
And they have to tell her that he's dead.
Yes.
Presumably.
He's dead. Presumed dead.
Yes.
And then we see Penny 23. He travels back to Earth to go hang out with Julia. And he's like, okay, I'm ready to help with the deity stuff. And Shoshana's like, we've already done the stuff. We've already done the rituals. You don't need the help. And so Penny's like, hey, if you need a ride or something,
yeah, Penny's a little pathetic.
Yeah, well, he's dick whipped. But
no,
then.
He's not dick whipped. He's pee whipped.
But Shoshana needs to do more diagnostics because Julia is still inconclusive. So she says, do you have any, you know, cloaking spells or anything on you? And Julia says, yes, I do. I have one to keep me safe because Irene McAllister might find me. But I need it. You can't dispel it. And Shoshana says, oops, already dispelled it.
Obviously not that good of a
spell. And she's like, oh, don't worry. You know, I'll reinstate it. And then, like, the seconds that she's reinstating it, Iris, the goddess that we saw before in season 3, you know, peeks through the shield. Up. Yeah, she shows up and she says, hey, I need you to help us trap the monster. Because you're a sad, pathetic little god who doesn't have any god powers except for immortality, but you're frail like a human, and you'll just live a terrible life.
Immortality is a pretty good power.
No, it's not, because you watch all your friends die.
You make new friends.
No,
just think of how many friends you'll have.
No, no, because they'll all die eventually.
And then you'll make friends with influential, famous people.
No, no, no.
And like that movie that I saw with Tom Hiddleston.
No, no, no.
Yeah, where he was the vampire.
But Iris says, you know, you have to help us trap the monster, because if you don't, I'll kill you, because only a god can kill another god. Ha ha, gotcha. You need to bleed this stone, and you dump the blood on him, and then it'll, like, momentarily trap him, and then I will take him back to the castle, back into his prison. And so Julia, you know, under duress, because she's being threatened, it says, yes, okay, I'll take the stone, I'll do it. And then, you know, Iris disappears, and Shoshana's like, okay, I put the ward back on.
Yeah.
Then we see Fenn and Margot. Fenn has been crying for 2 hours over the loss of Elliot, and she says, Margot, how long did you cry when you found out that Elliot was dead? And Margot does not answer. And then we see Rafe.
Yay.
Mwah. We see beautiful, beautiful Rafe. And he says, hi, King Margot. Can you please say hello to Abigail? She hasn't said a word all day.
Uh-oh.
It's so
foreshadowing.
Sad. Foreshadowing. It's so sad. And so Rafe and Fenn cry together.
Yeah,
it's very
sad.
And then we see Q, Julia, and Shoshana. Shoshana does not trust Iris, because apparently she's always been kind of sketchy, and that she talked Bacchus into doing something, you know, way back in the past, and Bacchus never talked about it, even to that day. And so she's like, I don't trust her. And Q's like, well, this is the only option we got, because Elliot is dead now. We just have to get rid of this monster, you know? And so then we see Penny 23 with some random guy. He says, hey, yo, are you Penny? And Penny's like, yeah. And then he gets jabbed in the neck.
With a needle.
Yeah.
Which is like between suicide and people getting needled. This is a constant, visual motif in this show. Getting needled.
It's awful.
It is awful.
So then we see Elliot's first idea for what's his worst memory. And we see the aftermath of Elliot having killed Logan Kinnear.
From the book.
No.
Isn't him...
No.
Yeah, I thought that was in the book where he used magic to kill...
No.
That bully.
No. It's just the show.
I thought it was in the book.
No.
Ugh.
It's just in the show.
All right.
But the bus is, like, splattered with blood, and Logan's body is getting wheeled away, and Elliot is being sad in the corner. And Elliot's like, look at me. Look how sad I am. This is the worst time ever. You know, I had a terrible time. And Charlton points out, hey, you know, you still had a friend to comfort you.
Right.
And Elliot's like, oh, yeah, Taylor, my only friend at the time. He stuck by me, you know, after everything, after I was feeling my worst. And then he goes, oh, shit, wait. And we go back to another memory. And it's Taylor getting the shit kicked out of him by, like, a bunch of boys
bullies.
In the gym. And Elliot is also
one of those bullies.
One of those bullies. And he kicks Taylor particularly hard in the stomach.
And he feels bad about it.
Well, Elliot says, you know, hating myself for what I am is one thing. But to hurt somebody else is just awful.
Yes.
Bad
memory.
But
not bad enough.
Not bad enough, because the other inmates, the other monsters inside the monster, show up and they attack and kill the gym teacher memory guy.
Which is weird, because, like, did you notice that when... So first of all, it's digital blood, which always looks bad.
Yeah.
But also, did you notice that the digital blood splattered on the camera lens?
Yes, I saw that.
So does that mean that there was actually a cameraman in the gym filming?
No, it's just for effect.
No, it's not, though. It's dumb.
It's for effect.
It's like, oh, it splattered your TV screen or something?
Yeah.
No, that like, they've never done anything else. Like, that's kind of like if, like, you know, something came rushing out at the screen and then cracked the glass of your TV set, right? Like, just for a second. Like, it took me out of the moment because it didn't make any sense.
Well, you know what takes me out of the moment?
What?
The bad costumes for the monsters.
Oh, yeah. They look like...
they don't look nice.
They look like medieval, like rotted medieval plague doctors.
Yeah.
They don't look very cool.
They don't look very monstrous.
They look like somebody went to the spirit store and then sprayed, like, fake webbing all over them.
Uh-huh. But then we see Julia and Q. Q has managed to... get one drop of blood from the living stone. And he says, you know, they say...
There's a reason
drawing blood from a stone is a saying.
Right.
And the monster returns again, and they frantically hide the little jar of blood that they're trying to make. And the monster says, hey, I went to Mesopotamia, and when I went there, I couldn't figure out what was up at first, and I got really frustrated, but then I powered all of my power into the bean.
And then it became the Lord of the Ring bean.
Yes, yes, and some writing came up.
And it says...
one ring to rule them all, one ring to find them, one ring bean. To bring them all, and in the darkness bind
one
them.
One
bean to bring them all. But Julia says, you know, hey... We can, hey, dog, we're trying to recap. but Julia says, hey, you know, we can translate the writing of that if we take a field trip to Breakbills, and we could go to the library and figure out what's up. And the monster says, field trip? Okay, let's go. So then we see Margo and Fen, and Fen is doing the last lay, which is a ritual where the widow of the deceased king lays in her bed with... covered in all the clothes that the king wore.
It kind of looks like she's at a New Year's Eve party and is just laying on the bed where everybody puts all their coats.
Yeah. And she tells Margo, hey, everyone's gone for the day except for the carpenters who are building the altar and monument to Elliot. And so Margo's like, great. So I'm going to go find the carpenters to go open my birthright box because Margo has now gotten her birthright box. So then we see Q bleeding the stone. He's not really having a good time. His hand is getting cramped because it's the same motion over and over again. But Alice appears. And Q doesn't let her come into the actual apartment. But she says, hey, Quentin, you die in 2 days. Just want you to know. And if you try to trap the monster, then you're gonna die.
Right, you're gonna get distracted, you're gonna screw it up, and the monster's gonna kill you out of anger.
Yeah, and Quentin says, hey, you know, well, we have to do this because if we don't, Iris is gonna kill Julia, so we really have no options. And Alice says, hey, just let me help, and I'll leave you alone after this. Just let me help. And so Quentin begrudgingly...
Alice just wants to help.
...lets her help, yeah. So then we see the monster, Julia, and Shoshana. They're all researching in the library, and Shoshana finds the answer to what they're looking for.
And what does Elliot say?
Oh, the monster?
The monster, yes.
What does he say?
He says he hates books, proves that he is a true monster. Because anyone who hates books is a monster.
But we have a little back and forth of Julia going, no, you didn't find the answer. And Shoshana goes, oh, no, yeah, no, yes, no, I didn't find the answer. It's a different answer we were looking for. Because Shoshana just wants to be helpful, but she's being helpful in all the wrong ways.
Yep.
She's like, I just don't want to see another god die, you know?
Right, right.
Yeah.
And then, so then Elliot leaves.
The monster.
The monster leaves, and Julia...
She rips a page
out of the book. Who's the real monster?
The monster who's murdering people.
No, it's Julia defacing a book.
But then we see Elliot. He's got this giant chalkboard list of every single awful thing that's ever happened in his life that he's repressed. And Charlton's like, are you sure we can't cut this down even more? And he's like, no. This is what we have to work with.
Right.
And so we start going through the list, and Elliot's like, I had the idea when the monsters attacked my gym teacher. So here are my friends in their most vicious states of being. And he says, this is Quentin when I convinced him to fight Penny. Here's Fen when she was ready to fight pirates, and here's Margo as Welter's captain. And Margo is the most ferocious out of everyone.
Of course.
So then we go down the list, and we see a bunch of different
clip shows.
Scenes. We see Elliot's worst, terrible haircuts of 2005 and 2007. We see two cases of failure to rise when he was having a hookup. We see him sleeping with people's boyfriends. We see him betraying friends on accident and betraying friends on purpose. And We get to jailing Margot, and they still can't find a door, and...
It's not bad enough. He's not regretful enough.
It's not bad enough, but while they're there in White Spire, the monsters appear, and so Fen goes after them and immediately gets nicked, but Margot, vicious as she is, beats the shit out of one of them, and so they get out of there, but Charlton gets, like, stabbed through the middle before they can do anything else. But yeah, and Charlton falls against the stairs dramatically and says, fuck, and he's finally said fuck correctly, because this whole time he's been trying to use the word in a sentence. So then we see Alice and Quentin. Alice bleeds the stone, and it literally takes her, like, you know, a minute, and then it's, like, going super fucking fast. And Q says, okay, we'll bleed the stone, we'll do the trap, we'll stop the monster today instead of in 2 days, I won't die, great. And Alice is like, hey, you know, I just want to help. And Quentin's like, can you not? I don't want to deal with you right now and this kind of stuff that's happening. I'm about to kill my friend, and it's a monster with his face and eyes, and I can't do this right now. And Alice quotes Quentin's book back to him, and she says a dog approached and distracted him, and the monster saw Quentin had the blood, and so the outraged at the fact that he was being betrayed, the monster killed Quentin, and that's how he died. And she's like, listen, I'll do anything to just prove that I'm worthy of redemption and that I can be redeemed and that I want to have this redemption arc. Just, like, tell me how to do it. You know, she's like, I didn't come here to make up. I just came here to save your life. And also, you know, I killed Christopher Plover. I shoved him in the poison room. Does that give me any brownie points? Like, come on.
And poor Quentin is like, you killed my favorite childhood author.
He's like, even though he was an awful person, you still killed him. And she's like, okay, fine. There is a spell in this book. She grabs this book and she says, that tells me where I'm supposed to go. Do the spell with me and I will go wherever it tells me to go and I will be gone. I will just go. And Quinta says, do you promise? And she says, yes, I promise. And so he agrees. So then we see Margot and Fen, and Margot is getting the carpenter to open her birthright box. And Fen says, have you cried even once this whole time that we've been, you know, mourning Elliot? And Margot says, I can't cry. Because if I cry, I'll cry out all my sadness forever. And I'll never stop and I'll just be useless. And she says, I have to run a kingdom, so I can't do that. And poor Margot. This great acting display by Summer Bishop.
Of course, Summer always awesome.
Eyes are so glossy and her little lip trembling and it's so good. But then the carpenter, who looks like Darren Criss, opens her birthright box, and inside is a lizard.
Yep, and the lizard says...
Nothing.
Because?
It's a talking lizard, but all the animals have been struck dumb.
Exactly.
Including the sheep choir.
Including Abigail.
Including Abigail, which is very sad.
Yes.
But then we see Elliot, Charlton, and Quentin, and they are sitting back in the happy place in the cottage, trying to figure out what to do. And, you know, Elliot says, tell me again, like, what was your most awful memory? And Charlton says, well, it was the day that I left home. And Elliot says, why is it the worst day? And he says, because it was the day I left home. And, you know, they're trying to brainstorm and trying to figure it out. And Quentin's like, you know, well, we'll keep going. I will defend it. And you guys can go off and we'll just figure out what to do. And, you know, Elliot says, hey, Q, I know you're just a memory, but you're a sweet one. And Quentin says, yeah, you know, well, you sacrifice for people you love. And Elliot says, oh, shit. Because he just realized what his most repressed and most regretted memory is.
Right.
Of all
and
time.
Then all of a sudden the episode becomes Back to the Future 2.
No.
Where Elliot is having to avoid confrontation with his own self.
No.
In order to make sure his parents get together at the under the sea dance.
No. Oh. So, Elliot.
What if that had happened though?
No.
What if that had happened though? Like, what if it all of a sudden, like, the plot, rather than it being about the monster or anything like that, it became like this Back to the Future farce where, like, Elliot had to avoid himself, and we get to see the entire mosaic episode all over again, but with Elliot, like, sneaking around in the background, trying to get information to Quentin, but to avoid himself.
Nah.
No, you wouldn't want to see that?
I mean, I would, but maybe.
See, there you go. That sounds like some good fan fiction for you to write.
Maybe you should write it.
Nope.
But you know who we do see? We see Elliot, and he's back in Whitespire, and we see the end of 305, A Life in a Day, that we didn't see last season. So we get to see the end of that conversation right after they got all their memories back.
Do you think that they filmed that?
No, absolutely not. They're wearing wigs, and Elliot's hair is brushed back, and it looks fucking awful, dude. But, you know, I did, in fact, write down most of the lines.
Yes, but you must be thrilled because this is your favorite moment in the entire show. Peaches and plums, right?
It's a good moment.
It's your favorite
moment.
Admit it. You've made, like, so many fan things
about it.
I think you even talked about getting tattoos about peaches and plums.
No.
Oh, no, just earrings?
Leo has the tattoo. Right. My best friend does. But, you know, they say, Elliot says, did it happen? 50 years? It happened. And while this is happening, we see Quentin in the real world preparing to trap the monster with the blood from the bloodstone.
Yep.
And then we see Quentin from Elliot's memory, and we see Elliot this whole time. He is watching this exchange with the saddest expression on his face.
Because he knows he screwed up.
He knows he screwed up. And so Quentin says, you know, I know this sounds dumb, but we work, you know, who gets that kind of proof of concept? You know, what if we gave it a shot? Would that be crazy? You know, why the fuck not? And Elliot says, you know, Q, I know you and I love you, but that's not me and that's definitely not you. Not when we have a choice. Which just is so sad because Q right afterwards, he's just like, okay. It's just so sad because Elliot immediately shuts him down and because he just doesn't want to, you know...
Because the writers don't want him to be happy and gay?
Yeah.
Exactly. All right, yeah. So...
But we see Elliot confront his memory self.
Yes.
And he says, what the hell is wrong with you? What the hell are you doing? And while this is happening, we see Q and Alice, and the dog distraction comes in, and Quentin is like, here, fetch, and he throws the dog ball to get the woman away.
Get rid of the dog. Get rid of the lady.
Yeah.
And then here comes...
Well, we see Elliot, he's once again talking to his memory self, and he says, you know, someone good and true loves you, and he went out on a limb, and you know, it was crazy, but, you know, it was something, you knew this was something that truly mattered, and you just snuffed it out, and it's just this, it's so sad, And he says, Q, you know, I was afraid. And when I'm afraid, I run away. And then he kneels down to memory Quentin. And he kisses him. He smooches him.
I told you they kiss.
And then he says, you know, if I ever get out of your Q, know that when I'm braver, it's because I learned it from you.
And then, da-da-da-da!
The door to the Mosaic Cottage, the cottage from the Mosaic, appears.
That's his magic
door.
And it's
framed by the arches of Margot's wedding ceremony as well. So there's a little extra.
They pulled out all the props out of storage.
Yep. And so Elliot walks through the door.
Right.
And... The monster gets, you know, Elliot gets his body back for that second, and we see this great kind of body language of...
Elliot does a great job.
Hale.
Does a great job. Elliot and Hale.
Yeah.
But yes, you get this very nice moment where you go, hey, look, it's Elliot. The body language is back and the demeanor, and he's like, hey, it's me, and I'm here, and I'm alive.
Well, he says, it's me, it's Elliot. And Q says, no games, you know.
Right.
He doesn't believe him because, you know, why would he? And Elliot says, 50 years. Who gets proof of concept like that? Peaches and plums, motherfucker. And he pushes against Q. And Q says, Elliot. And he says, I'm alive in here. And the way they look at each other, oh, it's so good. And then immediately he turns back into the monster again.
Yes.
Elliot has gotten his one moment. And so Q was, you know, Alice was about to toss the blood on him. But Q pushes the monster out of the way and takes the blood himself.
Which does really nothing.
It does nothing because Q's human. And then, you know, we see Elliot one last time. He comes back inside the cottage and Charlton says, did it work? And Elliot says, I hope so.
Yep.
So then we see Iris and she says, Julia, you fucked up. So she goes to kill Julia and she kills Shoshana instead because Shoshana jumps in front of the way. Then the monster immediately kills Iris.
Yep. Takes her bean. Right out of her back.
And everyone is horrified, except for Quentin, who looks like he could have kittens. It's so great, actually. Jason Ralph is doing a great job because everyone else is just, like, you know, disgusted because they just watched two different people get murdered. And meanwhile, Quentin is like, oh, my God, yep. Elliot's alive, oh, my God.
Yep, yeah, he's and, very happy.
Yeah, and so Alice is like, the plan worked, right, Q? And Q's like, yeah, the plan worked.
That was our plan to kill Iris. Good job, everyone. High five.
Julia's like, you did it. You did it, Jennifer. You did it. And you know what? I wanted to save this piece of paper for you until after we got her. But here you go. It turns out that the organs, these beans that you're finding, they're organs and they're building blocks to make a body. And it might be yours. And yeah, everyone's like on the fucking verge of tears, except for Q, who's like so fucking elated.
All right.
And then, we see Alice and Q, doing the kind of like final, goodbyes. Julia comes in briefly and flips off Alice because of course.
Yeah.
And, you know, Q says, hey, I never really thanked you for saving my life because if I hadn't hesitated, I wouldn't have known that Elliot was alive. And now maybe we can find a way to save Elliot. So thanks. And then Alice is like, you know, just tell me what I need to do to like fix this and I'll just leave forever. And Quentin says, hey, you know, you saved my life. You could save my life 50 times. It's not going to change anything between us. Like, I love you, but it's done. And he literally closes the book on their relationship.
Right, metaphorical.
Not even metaphorical, literally. He closes a book.
Right.
And it's very visual. And so they...
Alice leaves.
He closes the book on the relationship and Alice leaves. And yep. That is the end of the episode.
And at the end of the episode, everybody is happy, right?
No.
No? No one's happy?
Not necessarily.
Quentin's
happy.
A little happy.
But, I just want to talk about my mixed feelings about the scene of Elliot and Quentin in the park.
All right.
So, it's this wonderful moment from Elliot's point of view. He has had this romantic, you know, realization in his mind palace. You know, he has come to this realization that this terrible, terrible memory of his canon biggest regret, is something that maybe he could fix. And he promises to himself and to Quentin, sort of, that he is going to be better. He is going to take this moment to actually pursue love and pursue happiness in his life. So when we see Elliot break through, it is this big, you know, triumphant moment for Elliot where he says, basically says, I love you to Quentin.
Yep.
And he says, hey,
it's a long kiss, too.
Not just that, but I'm talking about when it's Elliot and Quentin for realsies out in the real world.
Right.
He says peaches and plums. He affirms that he loves him and that those moments that they shared were real. Actual, like, that was actual relationship and those things were real and valid, and that he wants to like come back to that relationship again, fresh from the start, and like be together with him for real. But this is why I have mixed feelings about the scene. It's a great scene, I love it, it's so wonderful, but it's also awful. And the reason why it's awful is because this is the last time Q and Elliot ever speak to each other. Ever. In the whole show. This is the
spoilers.
This is not spoilers. You've seen the show. You've seen up to season 4.
Yes.
This is the last time that Elliot and Q ever speak to each other. And from Quentin's perspective, it is not the same circumstances. From Quentin's point of view, Elliot was probably saying 50 years, peaches and plums, because he knew that Q would recognize that code because it's the only thing those two know together.
Right.
From Q's perspective, yes, it is so exciting that Elliot is alive, but he doesn't know that his feelings are actually reciprocated or that Elliot has had this whole kind of epiphany moment about his relationship and his standing on love and acceptance in his life.
But we have.
We know, but for Quentin, it's just, you know, like a signaler that Elliot is alive. This is the last time they speak to her, and Quentin will never know, like, the extent of the, like, internal journey that Elliot went on to come to this moment. He will never know Elliot's, like, deeper feelings about it, because they never have the opportunity to talk about it ever again. This is their very last interaction, and it is so shitty.
And that is why you love this show so much.
But it just pisses me off because it's a great moment in, like, up to that point. You're like, oh my god, yes, when you get caught up in it. But then, you know, you get to the end and it just sucks. And really that's kind of the crux of all. Because there really is no true moment of, like, mutual queer joy in this story and in this show. Like, there is individual queer joy when we see Elliot make this realization for himself. But even then, it's just him on his own making this internal realization, which is very good because he's opening his heart and stuff. But we don't see them, it's never realized. And, you know, and when you leave these kind of little pinpricks of hope in the narrative, you think that maybe they'd finish it and, you know, realize that actual stuff, because that's where it seems to be leading. And instead, they just kind of nix it. And it really sucks, because I want to, like, be happy about this moment, and I want to be, you know, invested in it, and I am when I'm watching it, but then when you remember the bigger picture, it's just so sad.
Well, on that cheery note, what do you think of this episode?
Well, I do love this episode. It's very good, and I enjoy it so much. You know, I think it's a really great, like, insight into how Elliot as a person functions,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we see that, you know, throughout the whole series. We see him as this, the thing is that, you know, we're presented at first with this very shallow presentation of him, but that's because he's made it that way. He's made it so no one can go past that surface level. Yeah. And so this is the point where we are reaching and seeing the deepest parts of him and his deepest regrets. And I would like to point out that his canon deepest regret is the fact that he rejected Quentin. Like, that is canon, baby. That is worse than him committing murder as a child and, you know, any other things in his life.
That kid deserved it.
Well, yeah, Logan did deserve it. Not Taylor, though.
Right, right.
But yeah, it's just, it's a really good episode. Hale Appelman really shines in this episode. And it's just a really, it's this wonderful affirmation, too, for people who are supporting Quentin and Elliot as a relationship throughout the show. Like, it's this great kind of win moment, but again, it's also
a Pyrrhic victory.
Yeah, it really is. And it sucks in hindsight, but, you know.
All right, so, what would you rate this?
I would rate this a 5 out of 5, because it's just that good, you know. This episode is the highest rated episode of The Magicians.
You mean overall in, like,
Every season. This is the highest the highest rated episode out of every season.
Oh, okay.
This is the number one, and it is because of the Elliot of it all and the Quelliot of it all.
Gotcha.
And just how good the everything is, you know? And also, I do love the fact that Quentin physically closes the book on his and Alice's relationship. Like, this is as far as I'm concerned, this is the end of their relationship as, like, a romance. After this, you know, stuff does happen, but to me, it doesn't really ever read as romantic. It reads as kind of like a last-ditch effort of normalcy before things go horribly awry, you know? This is the moment for me where it's like they are fully broken up, and they are not friends, they're not lovers, they're not really anything to each other, but also they're everything to each other, you know?
Yep.
And they've got all this history, but Quentin has put his foot down in this final moment, and Alice is like, okay, well, I'm going to do something for myself now.
Right.
And I do like that. I really, really wish that they had, you know, had the time to work through all their complicated bullshit to become actual friends. It would have been so much better than what we got, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
What do you think of the episode?
I mean, it was good. I liked the kind of the not quite a ticking clock, but the race to kind of for Elliot, even though neither party was kind of aware of that race happening on either side. You know, Elliot racing to kind of find the door, and Quentin kind of racing to set up this trap for the monster. And, you know,
Alice racing to save Quentin.
Right, yeah, Alice racing to save Quentin. And then there were some other good moments. Like, I liked Alice's betrayal of Plover. And I liked the moment with Margot where she was like, you know, I can't cry, otherwise I'll never stop. And I loved the origin of Todd, of course, was great.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'll give it a 5 as well. I think it was a really strong episode. All the, you know, you're right, all the Quelliot stuff is probably the most compelling out of the show, and it's a shame that they never really followed up on it.
Yeah, you know, it just, I said this before, but it really sucks that, like, they made all this build up to it, and then there is no release whatsoever for it. Instead, you get the antithesis, the exact opposite of what the audience wanted. And and the logical continuation of the story. And I know they do that to subvert it and stuff. Yeah. But, you know, we talked about this before. It would be nice if once in a while we got a fucking win. You know, not every obstacle in a show has to be a relationship as well as a physical obstacle. You can have couples in a strong relationship and still have a physical obstacle like that's stopping them.
Right.
You can still have characters be happy together. And I know it's not as, you know, it's like, oh, it's not as interesting, but then find ways to make it interesting. That right. should be your challenge as a writer,
right.
is to make the idea of, oh, these two queer men are in love with each other and shared a life of each other. Okay, that's really interesting. How do they maintain that relationship while dealing with these extra stressors? That would be way more interesting than what happens.
Sure, yeah. I mean, there are very infrequently shows about people in strong relationships dealing with other problems. You know, I think of, like, famous movies like The Thin Man, where the couple is a happily married couple and they still deal with, you know, murder mysteries. Or, you know, even, like, old hokey 70s TV shows like Heart and Heart, or Heart... Have you ever heard of that show?
No.
It's like a married couple and the husband was like a ex-detective and the wife was a author, or maybe it was vice versa or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so they, again, like, usually these are murder mystery shows, so they're teaming up together. So then it becomes kind of a, you know, a Batman and Robin, or a Lone Ranger and Tonto, or, you know, like, it's a buddy show, but then the emphasis is like, all right, how are the buddies, you know, challenged this week? Right.
Yeah, the only one I can think of is, I'm forgetting the name of it, but it's the one where Timothy Oliphant's, like, wife is a zombie and she has to
right.
eat
That's,
people.
It
starts with an S.
Yeah, it's the the South Coast Diet.
Yeah.
Right.
Santa Clarita
Diet. Santa Clarita Diet.
Yeah,
right.
Like, that's another one where it's, like, a strong relationship where they have an outside stressor, which is the fact that she eats people. But, you know, it just, I think it'd be way more interesting if we actually had one, if the one really strong couple out of all these couples ended up being the queer relationship,
mm-hmm.
because then it'd be like, oh, we have all these other relationship problems because we have Penny 23 and Julia, and we have Margot and Josh and their whole thing. And, you know, it could, and we have Katie and Penny, you know, we spent 3 whole seasons on them. Why can't we have more than 2 episodes of, you know, relationship of these two queer men?
Just a lot of missed opportunities.
It really is a lot of missed opportunities, but it's also, you know, on purpose missed opportunities. You know, one of the head writers did say that this whole kind of part of the episode was an afterthought. They didn't really realize, like, it's kind of, my mom has talked about this before, it's kind of like Star Trek Next Generation, when Picard lives out his whole life on that planet, and then he does it in a span of 25 minutes and comes back changed. And eventually they're like, wait, that should have affected them. And so he starts playing the flute, you know, in the background and stuff. And it's the same kind of thing, but instead of really doing that, we only get that kind of influence of that experience from the actors, which, good on them, you know. You see past the point of A Life in the Day, Quentin and Elliot both, you know, they're still the same people, but they do act differently now.
Right. But it's not built into the story.
It's not built into the story, and
except
for this weird plot device. And I think it would have been so much better if they had actually planned it and then organically woven it into the story. So then, you know, because this episode is literally a whole season after that episode.
Yeah.
Because season 3 is season 3, episode 5, and this is season 4, episode 5. Those are the only two episodes we really get with them in this explicit kind of romantic relationship. And I just wish that we could have had some kind of scene. Like, we get that scene in 306 where it's kind of tense, but, you know, you don't know why. But I wish there was more of that as well. And there is that in the finale of season 3 as well, because, again, Jason Ralph and Hale Appelman are building that into their characters, into the motivations behind their arguments. But we don't get to see the full motivation behind their argument because it's not really written into the story, you know? And I just wish that it was, because then we would get, like, juicier character work. And it would just, I just feel like it would be even more fleshed out to what we already have.
Right.
But again, it's an ensemble cast, you know, there's a lot of different characters, but we do also have to remember that originally this was and remained Quentin's story in the trilogy. So, you know, even though they're like, hey, you know, he's the white guy, whatever, he's also the mentally ill, depressed, bisexual white guy. Like, we can't forget those other traits about him. And yes, he is cis and white and all that stuff. But
wait, what does that have to do with anything?
You will see. But it just kind of, it just fucking sucks, you know, that the guy who's the main character doesn't even get to have his swan song in the end, you know?
You mean they don't get to have the happy ending?
Yes.
For the relationship that they were setting up for two seasons?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Well,
and it just extra sucks.
Right. We already know that this series is ultimately a disappointment for you.
Uh-huh.
So, all right. So, what are some more positive things going on in the world of the Magicians?
Well, right now, the Magicians Big Bang is happening all throughout the month of August.
Is this a new Big Bang?
This is the same one, but now they're posting.
All right.
So there's a bunch of new fics that have started posting. I have not read them yet, but I do have the first two open in my little tab on my phone. I'm very excited to read it. Also, the sleep out for the Covenant House is still happening, and you can still support Philanthropy Bitches, the charity drive for the Covenant House. There are pins, there are auctions for original costumes from the cast.
You guys have already raised some money for that, right?
We have raised an amount of money, which I will not say, but it's a tidy sum. You can still get the zine. There are not many pins left. You can get bookmarks. You can get buttons. There may be one other thing that will be happening, but there's just a whole bunch of stuff. Or you could just donate on your own. We just really appreciate it. All the money is going towards unhoused youth all over the world. And it's a really good cause. And you
That's
should
great. Try you should and support it.
Yeah.
Excellent. So if somebody wants to reach out to you personally, and you know, just say hi or commission you for some artwork or you know, read one of your fanfics about the Magicians and find out where it is, how can they find you?
Well, you can find us at fillerandfather@gmail.com, fillerfather on Twitter, and fillerandfather on TikTok. But you can find me at @wow_then on Twitter, at @fishyduaros on Instagram, and EvelynLeeRogers.com. That's my art website. You can also find me as Evelyn Rogers on Patreon. And where can people find you?
Well, you know, there's this alley, back alley down in the city.
We live in the suburbs.
I live in a trash can like Oscar the Grouch.
Uh-huh.
And if you bang three times on the roof of the trash can, I might peek my scruffy head up and say, leave me alone.
Uh-huh.
Just like Oscar.
Yeah.
Or you can go onto Twitter or Facebook or LinkedIn or Instagram. If you look up Mighty Bedbug, or if you just put in Scott Rogers Game Designer. If you want to find out more about my books that I've written, you can look for me up on Amazon. If you want to see the board games I've designed, you can go to Target and pick up my newest board game, which is Alien Fate of the Nostromo.
Yes, this is the ad at the very end.
Yes, at the very end, the ad for my board game, which is actually people are responding very well to and are very excited for. And right now it's only at Target, but it will be elsewhere very, very soon. So keep your eye out if you like board games and you like the movie Alien. I highly recommend you picking it up. Mm-hmm. So what is next week?
episode 6.
And what
is... Of season 4.
And okay, and you don't know the name of it?
I don't remember the name
All right, well, you know what? You will find out the name of that episode next time on Fillory and Father. Yay! We did it! Bye, thanks for listening.
Bye.